You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
I'm Richie Justice with MLB.com. The American League West is one of the best, most interesting races in baseball. The Angels and A's at the top of the division. The Mariners have been playing better than any other team the last week. We're going to go down the stretch with those teams playing each other and fighting each other. And just like some of these other pennant races, we're probably going to recast it every 72 hours or so to decide who our favorite is. It's going to make for a chaotic September. And if you love baseball, chaos is good. I'm joined by Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Angels. Alden, in the wake of Garrett Jones getting hurt, the best starting pitcher, the guy the Angels hope to match up against John Lester or Max Scherzer or whoever in the game one, what was the atmosphere in the clubhouse? What was the resolve you saw from Socha, from the players? How did they react to this loss?
Richard, it was a devastating loss, obviously, as you know. They were pretty down. I remember the post-game clubhouse in Fenway. They won that game, and it was actually a pretty big win because it gave them sole possession of first place. They were a season high, 25 games above 500 after that game. And, you know, they were just – It was crushing, though, because they knew what it meant. They knew what Richards had meant for their season, and they knew how much more difficult it was going to be without him. I don't think there's any sugarcoating it. They understand that the season must go on. They're a veteran group. They know that they're still a talented team, and they still have a good chance. But, you know, it's funny because a few days later, Socha was asked, you know, hey, you know, can this be kind of like a galvanizing moment for the Angels? And it's kind of just like a softball question to tee him up. And, you know, you'd expect the manager to say, yeah, of course, I expect our guys to rally behind this. He said, absolutely not. This is not, I don't expect anything positive to come out of the Garrett Richards loss. It's not like guys are going to try harder. It's not like they're going to rally behind this thing. They got to move on and they got to try to persevere. But there's no doubt that given the season that he's having, and the overall lack of depth of starting pitching on the Angels and how difficult it is to acquire somebody in August, this is a really devastating loss. Having said that, they have a good offense that needs to get into gear. They have a very deep bullpen that can carry them. And they're going to need guys like Weaver, who pitched well last night, C.J. Wilson, who pitched well on Saturday, and Hector Santiago and Matt Shoemaker, who have been pitching better lately, to really step up now over these next 5 weeks.
Alden, it's always interesting when a team wins, you get contributions from Cole Calhoun, Matt Shoemaker. But Garrett Richards had emerged as a top-of-the-rotation guy. I think if you and I had had this conversation on opening day, we'd say, well, he's a young, talented guy. We don't know what there is. What led to this guy morphing in? Was it just a matter of growing up, learning the ropes, but becoming one of the best starting pitchers in baseball? What happened?
Well, I think you hit on it there, Richard. I think growing up and learning how to put pitchers together, how to set hitters up, and just how to thrive as a major league starter really helped. He's always had great stuff, but the thing that Garrett Richards will continue to point to anytime you ask him how he made that leap was he was taking his turn in the rotation every 5 days. And I know that maybe sounds a little oversimplistic,
right,
but for him it meant everything, because the previous 2 years he was just bouncing back from the rotation of the bullpen. He didn't know where he stood. He didn't know when he had to lift weights. He didn't get into any sort of routine, and he's the kind of guy who functions better under that routine. And I think, case in point, his fastball velocity actually jumped this year. It's not very often that you see a guy go from being mostly in the bullpen to being mostly in the rotation, and his fastball velocity gets higher. And I asked him about that, and he's like, it's because I'm throwing every 5 days. I know when to lift. I know when to get stronger. And he was the thing that's so crushing about this, too, he was only getting stronger as the year went on. You know, people made a big deal about his innings because he hadn't thrown more than 160 innings in the season, and he was going to blow past 200. He kept getting stronger and stronger, because I feel like that every 5 days routine just fit him so well that he kind of got into a comfort zone that he really settled into.
Alden, going forward, do you feel, you know, C.J. Wilson, you know, Jared Weaver, do you feel that they feel the responsibility to, it's a cliche to say step up, but I mean, essentially that's what we're talking about. And they both pitch well in their last starts. What's the responsibility they feel to make up the difference And I'll ask the kind of thing Socia doesn't want to hear. Do they feel it, do you think?
Yeah, I do. Now, will they try harder because of it? I don't know, but I don't think it's lost on them that this is a team that now is going to rely on them big time. Because you know, before, Garrett Richards was going to be the guy who started the wild card game. He was going to start game one of the playoffs, and they were able to line him up. He was going to be their go-to guy. Jared Weaver, C.J. Wilson, they're the two guys with experience in this rotation. They're the guys making the big money. They're the big stars, the accomplished guys. And there's no doubt it is not lost on them that they really need to step up. And Jared Weaver especially, because, you know, Jared's a guy, he's been with the Angels forever. He's a very competitive guy. He loves these playoff atmospheres. He loves these division races. He's been there before. And he's just been so crushed these last 4 years because they have not been competitive and they haven't played until October. He wants this as bad as anybody, and he knows that, you know, maybe his stuff isn't as great as it used to be. He's a little bit older. He's had a lot of wear and tear on that shoulder and on that elbow. But he knows that he's really going to have to step up to these guys, because look at the rest of the rotation. Right now you have Wade LeBlanc, a guy who's kind of a journeyman, who's spent most of the year in AAA. Matt Shoemaker, undrafted guy out of Eastern Michigan, who's having a great year. But, you know, he's a 27-year-old rookie who has never done anything in this league, never been in a pennant race. Hector Santiago, still a very unproven guy. There's no doubt, you know, I mean, Jared Weaver and C.J. Wilson could only pitch once every 5 days. But on the days that they pitch, they got to give that pitching staff some length. And they got to save the bullpen, because the bullpen is going to be taxed the rest of the way. They're going to lean very heavily on that bullpen over these next 5 weeks.
Alden, Jerry DePoto had accumulated veteran starters at AAA, Randy Wolf, Wade LeBlanc, and I guess you would call Chris Volstead a veteran. What was the deciding factor in deciding to hand the ball to Wade LeBlanc?
I think he was just throwing the best out of everybody there. He had 10 wins and a 4 ERA in the Pacific Coast League. That's not easy to do. And you're right. He's a guy who's, you know, he's had innings. He's accumulated 450 innings here. He's just the best option among what they had right now. Because Chris Bosa has really been struggling. Randy Wolf has really been struggling down there. And you know, Mike Socia talked about it after last night's game. On the nights when Garrett Richards' turn comes up again, he's got to have, you know, who knows? Maybe Wade LeBlanc comes in and throws a shutout today. Who knows? But he knows that on the nights that Garrett Richards' turn comes up, which is today, he needs to have relievers ready to kind of bridge the gap. He needs to get two or three innings from one or two relievers in order to bridge the gap to the back end. That's the way they're going to have to do it now, Richard. They're not, you know, the chances of them going out and getting somebody who's really going to be a difference maker in the rotation are very slim, even for a guy like Bartolo Colon. They're going to have to do it by committee.
Alden, looking at Mike Trout's numbers, they're down a little bit. I mean, he's still obviously a great player. Do you think his stolen bases are down? His home runs are up. His strikeouts are up. Do you think he has consciously exchanged strikeouts for power, or is this just part of pitchers adjusting to him and he's still a young guy that doesn't have 2,000 at bats yet?
That's a good question, and that's a tough one to answer because I've talked to Mike Trout about this. I'm not sure he knows how to answer, because it's not like he's consciously looking for the home run, looking to hit with more power. I think he's getting stronger. He's getting bigger. He's 23 years old. He was still growing into his body in his first and second year. So I think as a result, this is what's happening. The power is showing up. The steals are going down, and the steals thing has been a huge talking point all year, because he's got only 12 of them, and he's pretty efficient when it comes to stolen bases. Mike Socia continues to point to the fact that pitchers' times to the plate are much quicker, and they're watching him closer. I feel like Albert Pujols' presence behind him plays a big factor in that too. You don't want to open up for an intentional walk. But I think the one thing in Mike Trout's game that needs to shore up, and maybe the last phase of his development, is those strikeout totals. And, you know, I was talking to Don Baylor about that yesterday, and he actually volunteered it. He volunteered what everybody would think, which is, you know, if Mike Trout could just cut those strikeouts in half, he would be leading the league in batting average, and it wouldn't even be close. I mean, this is a guy who's on pace to strike out 170 times. He's still in the top six or seven in on-base percentage, slugging percentage, number two in position player WAR in the American League. If he could just find a way to cut down those strikeouts a little bit, that's I think, the next phase of Mike Trout's development, because he's a guy who he has a ton of speed, so just putting the ball in play, he's got a good chance to get on base. And he doesn't really have this long, intricate swing. He's got a really short, compact swing, and he's got a great sense of the strike zone. There's no reason why Mike Trout should be striking out that much with how talented he is.
Olin Gonzalez covers the team with the best record in baseball. His work is at angels.com. Olin, appreciate it. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much. Great work. Joined by Jane Lee of MLB.com, who covers the A's. Jane, I watched all those games with the Angels over the weekend. From where I sat, a long way away, it felt like a playoff series, and I know that's silly in August. What was the intensity level, the crowd? What was the whole environment there with the teams and the fans and everything?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, and it did feel like, you know, it was the postseason. I think a lot of it has to do with the crowd. I mean, you've experienced it before. That crowd, you know, Bob Melvin says all the time, when there's, you know, 30,000, it sounds like 70,000. You know, even sometimes on slow nights when they only have 15,000, it, you know, it sounds like double that. And so when you pack that place, you know, even as big as it is, I mean, it can be deafening at times. And certainly yesterday, the day before, it really did have that feel like it does in the postseason. I think, you know, that kind of plays to the advantage of the A's. They always consider the fans kind of the 10th man on the team. And, I mean, yesterday, even when they were down, you know, 6 runs, the fans were treating the game like they were up by 6 runs. It was really incredible. I mean, they were just, like, willing the A's to do anything. They were just waiting for, you know, anything. And most stayed till the end. And I think that just that has, you know, nothing but a positive effect on the team.
You know, I saw something cool on Saturday night during the replay challenge. The TV shot was three things, the umpires and the two managers, Bob Melvin and Mike Socia, and just seeing the tension on their faces as they're waiting for the replay decision to be rendered. It was like, that spoke volumes of like, boys, those are October expressions you're wearing there. And I guess that's what it's going to be going forward. Is the A's won 2 out of 3, and the Angels just lost Garrett Richards, and the A's have – everybody hurt, J.S.O., Donaldson, Doolittle. Did we learn anything? As we sit here today, do you think the A's are still better, or are these teams a coin flip apart, would you think?
You know, I think the A's do have the advantage just because of their pitching. I mean, Garrett Richards is just such a huge loss to that team. And the A's, I mean, you know, as some of their guys have struggled a little bit recently, like Kazmir, but I don't think they expect that to continue. And when you have, you can throw, you know, Kazmir, Samardzija, Gray, and Lester at the Angels, mm-hmm. like they're going to do this weekend. I mean, that's, you have to say that they have the advantage, you know, no matter who's in the Angels lineup. And the Angels lineup obviously trumps the A's lineup. The A's have to do things a little bit differently over there. They don't have a Trout to throw at you at any time, or Pujols, and now we're seeing Hamilton heat up. But they'll argue any day that, you know, pitching is going to win, and I think they definitely have the advantage when it comes to that.
It's probably a dumb question, but Sean Doolittle got hurt on a throw to first base, right, at the end of the game Saturday night?
Yeah, it was just, you know, he didn't know if it was a throw to first base or if it was a pitch he had made, but it just kind of, he felt it tweaked a little bit, and he was hoping, thought it would be a cramp. I think everyone was hoping it was just a cramp, and then when we found out he was going for an MRI, that's when you know, it's a little bit more serious than that. And it's definitely disappointing for this team, especially just considering the type of injury that, you know, it can take as little as 2 or 3 weeks, but it can also take up to several more weeks than that, and you just don't know. It's such a case-by-case basis, and you don't really even know at the onset. It's just how it heals, and you can't really do much to heal it. It's just you got to be patient, and they're going to have to be patient. And the good news is there's still 5 weeks left of the season, so they're really hoping that they have him back for at least, you know, those final 2 weeks, and that would be best-case scenario.
They have a deep bullpen. Do you, and with Gregerson and the other guys, do, how big a loss, this is really silly to say because he is the closer, how big a deal is this for the A's going forward?
I think it is a big deal. I mean, I do think they have the depth to withstand the injury and overcome it. You know, they do have guys that have closing experience before, but, you know, this is a team that had such a set bullpen. And I think anyone would argue that, you know, when guys have certain roles, they know their roles, they're more successful. And Bob Melvin is going to pick one guy to replace Doolittle and be that ninth inning guy. So he's not mixing and matching. They tried that earlier in the season after Jim Johnson didn't work out, and it really didn't work out well for anyone, Doolittle included. It wasn't until he was, you know, named closer and really got into the groove of things did he start pitching well. That's when Luke Gregerson started pitching well in the eighth. Ryan Cook's been so valuable for them in the seventh. So I wouldn't be surprised if they actually kept, you know, guys like Cook and Gregerson in their roles and
right.
then allowed, you know, an Erik O'Flaherty, who can get lefties and righties out, even though he is a southpaw like Doolittle, to maybe take over the closer's role.
Josh Donaldson, is it fair to say, maybe it is not fair to say, is he not going to be healthy again this year? Is this the kind of thing that's just going to need rest and you just take what you can get out of the guy? What is the deal with him?
Yeah, you know, he's back in the lineup, so he's obviously feeling better, but he's been banged up for a while. He's dealt with hamstring issues. He's been dealing with a hip thing recently, and now this left knee thing. You know, we don't really know the extent of what happened with the knee or even how he injured it, but it's just kind of, you know, added to the list for him because he's been dealing with a lot of things. You're seeing him a little slower on the bases, and it does seem to affect kind of the mechanics of his swing as well. But and this is Josh Donaldson. This is their best all-around player. You know, they're not going to take him out, even if just for a few days, to give him that rest because no one can afford rest right now, especially with so many other guys, particularly infielders. You know, Nick Punta's out, Jed Lowry's out. So many guys are already shelved. They really can't afford to have Donaldson on the bench, too, and he doesn't want to be on the bench. I mean, even when he was going for an MRI, he was begging Bob Melvin to hold off on writing his lineup because he wanted to be in there as long as it didn't show any structural damage, and it didn't. And Melvin kind of played the cautious route, gave him the one day off, but he's back in there, and I don't really expect him, you know, to take that rest because there's 5 weeks left, and they need, you know, as many guys in there right now as they can, especially just given all the injury woes we've seen creep up here.
Oh, do you think Billy being claimed, you know, Escobar, with the idea of maybe making a trade because he's uncertain when, if Lowry will be back? What do you think his thinking was there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a team, you know, Billy doesn't wait around for anything. I mean, when they found out that John Jaso was dealing with concussion symptoms, they went out and got themselves a catcher. I mean, Giovanni Soto hasn't really played much this year. I think it's just all of 10 games, but they were even fortunate enough that there was a catcher out there to get. And, you know, when they see a need, like we saw with the, you know, the trades for Lester and Samardzija and Hamill, he goes out and gets it done. Now, I don't think Escobar will get done. You know, I think he will stay with Tampa, but the fact that, you know, he made the attempt and is, you know, is making the attempt just shows that, you know, they don't wait and see. You know, obviously they like Lowry, but they don't know when he's going to be back. They're hoping September. And the race is too close for them to just kind of sit back and hope for the best.
Jane, what is going on with Scott Kazmir? His ERA is 6.5 this month. He got hit pretty hard by the Angels. Any concern going forward, or is this just, a dead arm period, a mechanical thing every pitcher goes through?
Yeah, it seems that way. Obviously, you look at a guy like Kazmir who does have an injury past, you might show some concern, but I don't think they are. I think, you know, he's given them a lot of innings this year. He's really only had a handful of bad outings, like we saw against the Angels. And for him, it's just command. And I think he knows himself and his mechanics so well at this point in his career to where it shouldn't be an issue for him to get back to the, you know, the pitcher that we were seeing in the first half of the season.
How's Bob Melvin handling all this, trying to piece a lineup together every night and dealing with injuries here, there, and everywhere? How's the old boy doing?
he's doing all right. He's not as calm as he has been in recent weeks. When you get thrown two or three injuries on one day, it's a little bit of a headache. And I mean, he couldn't even remember which lay or which knee Donaldson had hurt, just because there's so much going on, so many transactions involved. I mean, you have enough to worry about as a manager writing out your lineup. And when you throw injuries on top of that and you're mixing and matching and, you have so many platoons involved and those get hampered by injuries, it's no small task. But, I mean, he's such a professional. And I think the way – he handles these situations. It's just a testament to the type of manager he is, and I think his players sense that. If he was fretting, they would be too. And I think, he realizes injuries are part of the season, and these just happen to be coming at a bad time. But, there's no time to dwell on it. You kind of have to just focus your energy on getting everyone back and, playing well in the meantime with who you have.
Jane Lee covers the team with the second-best record in baseball, the team that's been the best team in baseball most of the year. Her work is at MLB.com and Athletics, OaklandAthletics.com. Jane, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy Houston, world's finest city.
I will. Thank you, Richard.
We're joined by Greg Johns of MLB.com, who covers the Mariners with distinction. Greg, your boys, as we record this, have won 15 out of 21. They're right in the thick of the wild card race, if not the American League West pennant race, because going down the stretch, the teams are going to fight each other out. What's the atmosphere? How are the fellas holding up? Because for some of these guys, for a large number of these guys, they haven't been through this before. And I remember Jeff Kent telling me, like, he would tell young players at the end of the season when you've been in the race, you're amazed at how exhausted you are. What do you see from guys that finally this thing they wanted to accomplish, they're in the mix to do it?
It's been, they just came off of a road trip through Detroit, Boston, and they're pretty tired when they got done. I'll tell you that. There were some good games, tough games, and you're right. There's a point in that season when these games mean a lot. And when you're playing games, they played a couple games in Boston that were just marathons. They came from three down and scored five in the ninth, to one of the better wins that I've ever seen for them in one of those games. And they were spent. I mean, they flew back across the country, and it showed a little bit when they got back and played Texas on Monday. I think they were a little tired, but that happens at every major league club, and especially the Mariners, who travel more than any team in baseball. But they've got some guys that can help in that regard, and foremost among them is Robinson Cano, who I think a lot of guys are leaning on, and he's taken a, when they signed him, they said this guy can be a leader, and I think people kind of wondered about that, because with the Yankees, that wasn't necessarily the case. He was one of many there. He really has taken a leader. He seems to really enjoy, his role with this team and kind of being the guy that the younger kids look to, and he's, one of those guys that's talking baseball all the time, and a wealth of knowledge and obviously experience in these kind of situations, and he's been big for them. Their pitching leader is Felix Hernandez, and frankly, he's never been in that situation. Felix is a big game pitcher, and there's no question about that, but he hasn't been in a playoff race. Cano has, and they got a couple other veterans that have been. Chris Young is a guy who's been in some playoff races. Austin Jackson, obviously, they brought in, has been there. So, they've got a sprinkling of guys, but you're right. The majority of this team are doing this for the first time. And right now, I would just say they're young and hungry. They're enjoying it.
The offense has really gotten going lately. Changes throughout. Logan Morrison's hot as crazy. What's going on offensively? Has this been as simple as the changes that Jack Sorensic made to the club?
It's interesting because in August, their offense has been one of the better offenses in the league, and that's huge for a team that their pitching is obviously, they've been built on pitching. It's carried them this far, it's kept them in the race, and everybody just saying, if they can just score a little more, this team could be right in it. And in August, their run production is up about one run a game, which is huge. That's going from from 3.5 to 4.5 runs a game puts them into that category where they're winning instead of losing right. those tough ones so much. And it's interesting, you know, since the trade deadline that offense has clicked. But the interesting thing is the guys they brought in are not necessarily the guys that are, you know, visibly carrying things. You know, Austin Jackson hasn't put up huge numbers. He's been a nice solid piece at the top and scored some runs, but he hasn't been on fire. Chris DeNorfi has had a couple nice games and some hits, but he's not playing every day. He's kind of a spotting out there in right field. And Kendrys Morales is starting to heat up, and that's been big. And he could really help him as he gets going. But really, in August, what's happened is the guys they've had have started hitting better. You know, McLendon says a lot of that's just having those other veteran guys in the lineup. It gives them better 1-2-9 and just that veteran presence. But give credit to those guys. Logan Morrison, you mentioned, he's had a great August, and that's been huge for him because first base kind of been a black hole. You know, Justin Smoke didn't have a good start here, and Logan Morrison didn't hit real well, and Corey Hart, when he played, didn't put up much. But Logan in August has been hitting about .350 and really starting to give them what they had hoped for there. And you know, the other guys, Andy Chavez has been big. Chris Taylor that they brought up at shortstop has been playing well. And maybe the biggest of all with some really timely hits this past month has been Dustin Ackley. Just starting to drive in some runs and kind of being the Dustin Ackley they hope to see. And those are the guys that really, you know, kind of solidified around Seager and Cano to give them a pretty good lineup 1-9. And it's made a huge difference, and that's really been the key. The pitching has been great. But you get that little extra offense, that makes them a team the teams are not going to want to face if you get the pitching as well as they got.
Best bullpen in baseball, but it looks like a couple of the young starters have had a couple of rough spots lately. Level of concern with the rotation?
Maybe the first sign of any of that, I think it's last, and it's not just the young guys. Part of it to me is, you know, that shoot they played in Fenway. That's not, you know, sometimes you get a little tough in Fenway. You know, they got a couple guys, Chris Young, probably not made to pitch in Fenway. He's kind of a fly ball pitcher, and that was a tough start for him. Iwakuma just has never pitched well against Boston. It's the one team that just has the number, and he had a rough outing there. You know, he's had trouble with them in Safeco and Fenway. Just not a good matchup for him for some reason. And Felix, his last starts after going, 16, 17 games in a row of 7-plus innings, has not gotten out of the sixth twice in a row. So that's, you know, guys carrying you that long, you're going to have a stretch like that. You know, it's pretty tough. So are they worried about it? They're pushing Felix back a couple days here to give him a little extra rest and everybody else. I think that maybe the one concern is the rookie, Ronis Elias. His innings are getting up there. I think they're trying to be real careful for him. They sent him down to coma for about 10 days, tried to lighten his load, brought him back. He hasn't been great in the two starts back. So I think there's reason for at least a raised eyebrow there. They really relied on their bullpen in Boston at 16 innings, and they gave up one run. That just saved the bacon. They swept the Red Sox without any of their starters getting a win, and all kind of came out of the bullpen. But you can't keep doing it too long. So their rotation's been awfully good. I don't think it's a huge concern. But certainly when you get in, you know, late August and September, you know, guys, that's when you really got to dig in. And it'll be interesting to see how they do down the stretch.
The schedule is interesting in that the first half of September, they play the A's six times. And then in the second half of September, they play the Angels six times. Plus, there's also a series against the Nats and a series against the Blue Jays. How do you look at the schedule? I don't know. It looks to me like it's a tough schedule. What do you think as we head down the stretch here?
Well, it's a real tough September, and schedule makers didn't do many big favors. September, they play 18 of their 27 on the road, ending with a real tough 11-game trip from L.A. to Houston to Toronto, kind of going back across the country, and then they have to fly all the way back with no day off from an afternoon game in Toronto and play the next day against the Angels and finish up with three in Seattle. And, you know, those are, if it comes down to that point, that's going to be when you find out what these guys are made of. Because that's a tough schedule to even play in baseball, going across the country, changing time zones three times, and then coming back home to finish up from Toronto. That's brutal. they played well on the road all year. Is the amazing thing. Their record's better on the road than at home. So, you know, they've certainly shown they can do it. The 20 of their last 30 games are against teams that are in playoff contention. So they will definitely, if they get in the playoffs, they will have earned it. There's no question about it.
Greg Johns covers the Mariners for MLB.com. Appreciate it, Greg. Keep it up, man. Joined by Brian McTaggart, covers the Astros with such distinction. And, Brian, a couple of things that are going on. I see that Josh Hader, young pitcher acquired in the Bud Norris deal with Baltimore, right, has been moved to Double-A.
Yep.
What's the scouting report on him as he's off to a little bit of a tough start at Double-A? What's his future closing in on the big leagues? Do they see him as a guy with a role in the big leagues next year or the year after?
Well, I think he's part of the next wave. I mean, I think he's the guy that's going to come to camp next year. I think he'll get a major league invite, come to camp, and then be one of those arms that maybe they stash at AAA or starts at AA and is at AAA by the end of the season. You know, there's a few guys ahead of him in the pecking order right now, the Wojciechowskis and Alex Whites and guys who are coming back from injuries and have pitched pretty well. So I think it would be kind of far-fetched to expect him to play a major role next year, but certainly he's off to his career got off to a pretty good start at Lancaster with what he was able to do. And yeah, he's struggling a little bit at Corpus, but, hey, if you can pitch at Lancaster, you can pitch anywhere.
Brian, what's the latest on George Springer? When do you think he'll play again?
Well, I mean, I think in the next, probably within the next week. I mean, this thing has lingered on and on, and we're to the point now where he's not going to have, unless he gets out in the next week or so, he's not going to have any minor league rehab time because the minor league season is going to end in a week. So, maybe he can get out this week in the minor league rehab and getting back. But, you know, this has really dragged on for a while now. And George came up in mid-April, and he's only played in 78 games. That was a pretty good 78 games. He had 20 home runs. And, take away the first 2 weeks, and he was putting up all-star-type numbers. So, sooner the better for the Astros, because I know everyone wanted to see him all summer, and then he gets up here and gets hurt, and you know this, it's a quad thing that's lingering. It's really disappointing, but you know, hopefully for his sake and the Astros' sake, he can get a at least 3-4 weeks under his belt to end the season on a good note going into next year.
Brian, fans I talk to really like watching Marishnick and Grossman play. Part of it, Grossman is a Houston kid. Everybody knows. Everybody that's had a kid in baseball sort of knows Grossman. What is the organization think of those two guys going forward, competitive for starting spots, for roster spots next year? Do they think they'll be part of things when the Astros turn the corner once and for all? By turning the corner, I mean 500.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think they would probably tell you that, yeah, we're high on both guys, but I think at the end of the day, probably not. I mean, Grossman, this was supposed to be the year, I think, if he's an everyday outfielder. And he got off to a terrible start, and he's been up and down between the minors. Now, since he came up his last time, he's played pretty well offensively, and he looks like the Robbie Grossman we saw the second half of last year. But I think they maybe realize that, maybe this is not the guy that, you know, we can count on at one of these corner outfield spots. Marisnik's been okay, not great. But if you look at their outfield going forward next year, you're going to have Springer, you're going to have Fowler. I think it's kind of a hodgepodge of guys. You mentioned Grossman and Marisnik are two of those guys, LJ Hose.
Right.
You know, where does Domingo Santana fit in the picture? They brought him up and he was completely overmatched. I think they kind of had visions of him being their third outfielder. Do they go out and try to get a third outfielder? I don't think either one has shown enough to where you say this, you know, in 2 or 3 years when we're winning, you know, Robbie Grossman is going to be our left fielder, our right fielder. Same with Marisnik.
Let me ask you about Scott Feldman. Reports that he was put on waivers. I would think 5 or 6 teams are going to claim him because so many of these contenders need starting pitching. What are the Astros? I mean, do you think he's the guy that Jeff Luhnow would try to turn into assets, or is he important enough in terms of leadership and what he brings to, helps with the young starters that they want to hold on to him through next season? What's the state of Scott Feldman, do you think, in the mind of Jeff Luhnow?
Yeah, I think that he wants to keep him for what you said in terms of leadership. He's pitched okay, not great. He's had little spurts. He's pitched pretty well right now. You know, he got hurt. But as far as what he brings to that clubhouse, I know the people who aren't in clubhouses probably hear that and roll their eyes. But when you've got a clubhouse of spring training full of young guys, the Cosarts and Oberholzers, who don't have much major league time, Dallas Keuchel, you know, at the same time was in that role, and they need somebody to look up to watch how he goes about his business, what he does between starts, his workout routine, how he deals with the media, all that stuff. And Scott Feldman was perfect for that role, and those guys followed him around like a puppy. And they're going to have even more guys coming up next year. And, you know, I think he's just too valuable in that role. Maybe a year from now when he's got a year left on his contract and some of these guys like Keuchel and Oberholzer have more service time and can handle things better and maybe teach some of these younger guys, and yeah, maybe they can spin him off. But I think for next year, even for having a spot in the rotation for the way he pitches, I think he's just too valuable for them right now. You know, we know he makes a lot of money, but you know, they probably overpaid for him, but he's served a pretty strong role here this year, not only by the way he pitched, but by what he does in the clubhouse. He's just a very solid guy in the clubhouse.
Yeah, you know, it's hard for people to understand. I see it with the Marlins when they bring in Garrett Jones and Jeff Baker and Casey McGee to play with the kids. It has an impact. It kind of set a you know, Johnny Gomes did it 2 years ago in Oakland. It's kind of set the standard for conduct for everybody. Another thing that's going on is the Dodgers announced that they're going to go to Oklahoma City next season. Is that right? Next season?
Yeah, Oklahoma City's PDC expires, right?
Okay, so the Astros were in Oklahoma City. It looks like they can't move to Round Rock, right? The Rangers have one more year and are not inclined to leave. What is the dynamic going on with their AAA team?
Well, it's going to be a little bit of musical chairs now. I'm sure there's probably going to be two or three locations that open up because teams move somewhere else. The Dodgers were in Albuquerque, so that's now in play. I mean, that's not Oklahoma City still. It's not terribly far away. But you are moving your AAA farther than what it was before when they would like to get it closer. I think the Oklahoma City, I mean, the Round Rock situation, they re-upped just before Nolan came to the Astros. They re-upped for another 4 years. So they could have maybe 2 or 3 years left. Now, the Rangers could agree to let the Astros out of that or let Round Rock out of that and join the Astros. But I don't see them doing that at this point, especially with Oklahoma now out of the picture, Oklahoma City, because that's pretty close to Arlington. So I don't see any way the Rangers leave Round Rock until that contract expires. So I think the Astros are going to be left with, you know, the Albuquerques and, you know, whatever else opens up. I'm not sure what other AAA teams are up for new contracts this year, but, you know, I know they would like to get the Woodlands thing worked out to where they buy a team and move it to the Woodlands. That's years away, and I mean that might not even happen. There's a lot of things that have to go right for that. They have to get the land and the stadium and the funding, and they have to buy a team and move it. So they're years away if they even get that done. So I think the best case for the Astros would be to be back in Round Rock, but they're under contract, and unless the Rangers get wooed for some reason by money or decide in good faith they don't want to be in a place where they're really not wanted anymore, then they're going to stay with Round Rock.
Brian, are there players that you want to see in September from the system that you're intrigued about, or has there been so many players come through that you've seen everybody that was on the threshold already?
I think position player wise, yeah, I've pretty much seen everybody that you want to see. If there's one guy out there that maybe you'd like to get a look at it, and we talked about the corner outfield spot and Marisnik and Grossman. Maybe take a look at it with Preston Tucker, who's done a pretty nice job at AAA. He's kind of a slugging outfielder. They got out of University of Florida a couple of years ago. Maybe he gets a shot, but he's a guy that's going to have to come up here and play every day. I don't think it would do him a lot of good to come up here and sit on the bench. I think the guys I really want to take a look at are some of the arms, and I mentioned a little bit ago, Tropiano's had a really nice year at AAA. Wojciechowski was injured all year. He's come back, pitched very well. He starts tonight. I'd like to see him come up and get some innings and see what he can do. And Alex White, who rebounded from Tommy John surgery, now has put up some pretty good numbers here his last 3 or 4 starts. And he's a guy that I thought could be a key piece to their rotation this year, and he was out all year. So, you know, let's get him up here and take a look at him as well. Other than that, I mean, maybe a Matt Duffy, a third baseman, but I don't think he's a third baseman of the future. But if we get a look at Tucker and some of these younger arms in September, I think it would probably be pretty good for the fans and for everybody.
You know, it's pretty fascinating to watch this thing come together. There's 1,000 pieces flying around the air as Jeff Leno tries to piece a winning roster together, and so much uncertainty, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Tons of uncertainty. And maybe I think next year is where things really need to start, you know, stabilizing a little bit, where the rotation, you know, here's our rotation for the next few years. Maybe there's one hole, and they got to identify a couple of more of their key pieces offensively, I think, and, you know, where you go with third base. You know, I think these are the questions they have to answer next year, because in 2016, they, you know, they could be in the position where they start to contend if they get some of these questions answered.
Brian McTaggart of MLB.com. His work is at Astros.com and other places. Appreciate you joining us. University of Houston legend. Good week. Good luck to the Cougs this week. We'll be sort of rooting for them.
All right, Richard. Thanks a lot.
Joined by T.R. Sullivan, who covers the Rangers for MLB.com and TexasRangers.com. T.R., a couple of questions about moving forward. What do the Rangers look at Leonsis Martin this year and see of his development?
Well, he hasn't come around as much as they had hoped. You know, he's still a hacker at the plate. He's, you know, he's not as selective as they'd like him to be. At times he is. At times he looks pretty good up there. Other times, you know, he's swinging at anything and everything. You know, I think outfield, you know, he can really cover the ground. He's got a tremendous arm. You know, this is his second full year in the big leagues. You know, they still think he's got a chance to be, you know, a pretty good offensive player. It just hasn't come as fast as they had hoped.
And as, let me ask you about a couple other positions. In second base in 2015, is Jerickson Profar going to be back, or is Odor going to compete for the job? What's going to happen at second base in 2015, do you think?
Profar's going to have to play winter ball, and I think that'll tell a lot where he's at. And then they'll just come into spring training, and they'll compete for the job. And, you know, they may have an extra infielder. I mean, Odor's not going anywhere. You know, they might make a trade this winter, see what they can get. But I think the first thing they need to do is get Profar healthy and get him playing winter ball at some point and see how he's doing.
3 years ago, you know, I think most people in baseball thought Profar and Mike Olt were among the 5 or 10 best players in the minor leagues. Is this a reminder that it's just hard to evaluate players, or were those two guys overvalued from the beginning? What is your view on those guys?
Well, I think Profar would have had a chance to have a breakout season. You know, last year he was a utility infielder. That's kind of a tough job for a young player to handle. However, there have been guys like Bobby Gritch, just to show you how old I am, who broke into the big leagues as a utility infielder and ended up having a long, successful career. I think the biggest thing was Profar got hurt, never got healthy. I think if he'd have stayed healthy this year, I think he'd have had a really good gauge on whether Jerickson Profar was the real deal or not. And there's a lot of people who still think he is. You know, they just need to get him out there playing somewhere.
So Giovanni Soto gets traded to the A's. What are the Rangers looking at in terms of catcher next year? Do they have somebody in the system? Do they have to go out and get somebody? What are they thinking there?
Well, they like what Chirinos has done this year. They're not sure he's a full-time, everyday catcher. They got a young kid coming up today, Tomas Tellez. He'll join the team in Seattle for their three-game series. You know, this kid is a hitter who had a major arm injury early in his minor league career that really set him back, but he's really made some significant strides. You know, when they first signed him, they thought he was going to be a big prospect, and he might be. So they're going to take a look at him over the final 6 weeks. And then they got Jorge Alfaro, their number one prospect, or, you know, right there with Joey Gallo, who's probably a year or two away, but, you know, he's got a chance to be something special too. So they got some good young catchers in the system that they can take a look at, and they're really happy with Chirinos. You know, they may have to go out and get a veteran guy in the offseason just to, you know, give them some depth and some veteran presence. You know, might be Giovanni Soto again. Who knows? But they're okay at catcher right now.
Okay. The last 2 years, Robbie Ross has been a really good setup man. He was kind of getting his feet on the ground, began the year in the rotation. What is his role, do you think, in 2015 and going forward? Back to the bullpen, or do they still think he can be a productive starting pitcher?
I mean, they'll probably give him a chance to start, but I think he's better suited for relief work as a left-handed reliever. Like you said, he did a very good job the past two seasons, and, you know, I'm not sure he's got the stuff to, you know, hold up for 7 to 8 innings. I think he might be better as a reliever, but, you know, we'll see. They got to find 5 starters, and they got a lot of work to do to find those 5.
Yeah, and TR, as just sort of looking in the John Daniels blueprint, do you think right now, just today, he looks as Feliz pitching the 9th inning next year? That's his hope, and maybe Robbie the 7th or 8th, and then figuring it out backwards from there after he takes care of the rotation.
Well, I think, you know, Tanner Shepard is, you know, he's he had a loss here because of his injuries. They still think that he can be a number one setup type reliever. You know, they got some young arms. Ramon Mendez has pitched well. Sean Tolleson has pitched extremely well. John Edwards, they got some young relievers up here right now. Alex Claudio and Phil Klein that are pitching pretty well. So I think they're not really too worried about the bullpen. They got a lot of young arms in there. And, you know, maybe they go out and get a veteran guy, or maybe they get lucky again like they did with Tolleson and pick somebody up off of waivers. Maybe Nick Martinez goes to the bullpen next year. I think they got plenty of arms to fill out a bullpen. I think, the big thing right now is to find those starters.
And, T.R., I'm going to ask you a dumb question. Because the Rangers have a deep farm system, because they have money to spend, and because there's a lot of talent to try to just get back on the field, do you think that right now John Daniels is optimistic about the competitive team, but about being able to put a competitive team on the field in 2015?
Well, I think so. I mean, the huge thing is Prince Fielder. I mean, you know, that was a huge injury for him, and you can see how bad their offenses has been. You know, they'll need another bat or two, but, you know, the big thing is getting Prince Fielder back healthy. And if that happens, and, you know, then they have Alex Rios, and they got Shin-Soo Chu and Adrian Beltre. They have their offense put back together again. They've still got to find a couple of starters. You know, Derek Holland should be healthy next year. Darvish should be healthy next year. They're using two guys. You know, they've still got to find a couple more, maybe Nick Kepish and Nick Martinez, but one more veteran starter, I think. So the big thing is getting Fielder back, one or two more bats maybe somebody who could DH, a veteran DH-type guy, and then, one starter. They can do that. They got a real good shot at being competitive next year.
TR, have you learned anything about Ron Washington this year? How is he held up under all the losing, which the organization has not been accustomed to?
Well, you know, I don't know if I've learned anything about it, but I've been reinforced that the guy loves to teach. I mean, you know, no matter what happened the night before, you know, no matter where they are in the standings, he's out there every day working with Odor. He's out there working. They're out there working with Leonis Martin. You know, they're constantly trying to get players better. He's working with his first baseman, trying to get them, you know, better defensively. I mean, the guy has been tireless as far as trying to teach and trying to make these players better, knowing that this is a lost season, but it won't be if, you know, some guys like Odor and Leonis Martin and others can really show improvement. I mean, you know, that's what's on everybody's mind right now. Right now you're seeing Ron Washington, the teacher, out there every day.
T.R. Sullivan covers the Rangers for MLB.com. Has done it for a long time and with distinction. I sure appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you, buddy. Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the American League West.